Welcome to the Night's Watch, the officially unofficial podcast for HBO's Game of Thrones. I'm your host, Aaron.
And I'm Mad Brew.
And tonight we'll be talking about episode 8 of season 1, The Pointy End. And I'm going to go straight to Mad Brew for some extended information and tidbits about this episode.
All right. The usual rundown is the director is Daniel Manahan, or Minahan. The teleplay was actually written by George R. R. Martin this time. So I believe he has the option to do one per season.
Option, huh?
Yeah, as, you know, since the story was his and he's an executive producer or what have you. I saw somewhere that Martin had said that, you know, actually George R. R. Martin has extensive screenwriting credits.
Did not know that.
Yeah, he's written a lot of, you know, teleplays and stuff like that. And he said, but that was a while ago. And he said the hardest part about getting back into it was learning the software.
Huh.
So it'd be interesting to know what software he uses, but I don't have that information. This episode actually got an Emmy nomination for costuming.
Interesting. This particular one.
This particular one. It must be all that leathery, skin-tight shit that they do. I don't know. Mm. Also, this episode, was the way that George penned it, was actually too long and expensive.
I've heard a rumor about that. Mm-hmm.
So they had to cut out. He had a part in there where Rob calls out all his father's bannermen. It's supposed to be this big montage of you know, warriors riding out from 8 different castles.
Right.
And it was just deemed impossible to shoot. So
probably not impossible, just for what little it serves
for the
purpose.
First season.
I thought it was
hopefully
still...
because it, that I mean that seems like in the Game of Thrones we're going to have stuff like that as the core. Mm-hmm. You know, some core battles and stuff like that. So I hope that...
Save the budget for
where
it's needed.
Okay, yeah, that's what I hope is doing. And I think the mystery from the last episode, where it showed the Eyrie in the title credits, but then we didn't get any Eyrie action.
Right.
I think there's a carryover from the last episode, a scene with Tyrion and Bronn that was supposed to be in the last episode, but it's in this episode.
Oh, so it's too late for the credit sequence to be... worked out. You'd think that'd be relatively easy to recut, or I wonder if it's
or maybe
it's
just an oversight. Yeah. And the episode was dedicated to Ralph Vicinanza.
Don't look at me. I can't pronounce shit.
Yeah, I don't know. It obviously looks like an Italian name. But anyways, he was a co-executive producer when he died.
Oh, really? God damn, this show's cursed like the stage play
of
Macbeth.
I think this is, like, I think... Every series is kind of like this.
This
show, it's just there's so many people involved.
Yeah.
That, you know, people, you know, just, you know, people naturally die, and there's just so many of them that it's...
Do you think this show is also... But I don't know, man. There's a lot of young people dying, too. Do you think this show is a little bit... Do you think this happens in every production? It's just that this show is a little bit more macabre, so they always are doing death dedications? The equivalent.
I think it's not unusual for people to die involved in the show to die, you know, in the course of the show and the running of the series.
You know what would be funny but incredibly poor taste? If they CGI'd the head of every time someone died when they're going through King's Landing, they had little pikes and they put the CGI of their head, and each season would accumulate. You know.
Oh yeah, that would be interesting. I'd be
who's
up for
to say
it.
They didn't?
You'd have to sign a waiver, but I'd sign it. Sure, if I
if
die.
You were dead. Yeah, oh yeah. If you die,
feel
you
free.
Post your digital likeness for us to mount on King's Landing's steampunk.
Some other details that this originally aired June 5th of 2011, had 2.72 million viewers the first time around, and it has a runtime of 59 minutes. So those are the itty bitty gritty details.
All right, are we ready to do a recap here?
Did we mention our theme song by Alert?
We did not. Thanks for the reminder. Our theme song is badass.
Yes.
We rock out to it. It gets us psyched.
We shouldn't be remiss in mentioning that is by Alert, and he will be linked in our show notes.
And if you're wanting to know right now, it's soundcloud.com/alert.
TM.
All one word. Now we're ready for a recap.
Now we're ready for the recap.
All right, so the pointy end. We start off in King's Landing. Mm-hmm. Sirio and Arya are practicing their dancing.
That's right, and it kind of picks up right where the last episode left off.
Yeah, it's kind of action-packed. I like the contrast between the lesson of swordplay and then the brutal reality.
Yeah, it's a nice contrast. Obviously, I think... this is going to lead, I think all this is a build up into Arya actually becoming a fierce warrior s of, you know, in her own right. But the scene has, you know, one of the best lines in the movie. It's the second time it's been said.
What do we say to the god of death?
Not today.
You know, and again, as I probably pointed out before, that's not in the original series.
See, that's excellent.
That's not in the book.
This is, you know, this is, you can actually see the video format contributing to the mythos.
Hell yeah. I mean.
So all you, you know, novel reading naysayers, I think that's a good contribution from the video part.
Indeed. I would like, anyone that says that that's a not a good line, I would like to punch in the face.
Burn in hell.
Yeah. If I would believe in hell. I also thought it was interesting that they, Ciro gives this lesson about true seeing. You know, watching is not seeing.
Oh, yeah, because he's and calling then, out his moves.
Right.
But an opponent's not going to do that.
Well,
so you have to watch.
But what I'm saying is that he may put that immediately into practice as the, you know, one of the Kingsguard. And some men came in to say that, you know, your father requests you. A lot of people, an observant, would not question. Obviously, Arya wasn't going to question it. She was just going to go ahead with him. And he's like, no, hold on a second. Why?
Yeah.
Why are you Lannister?
Yeah, he's very, yeah, he's, he has some insight there, which is probably, you know, it's what keeps
people. Right.
It's what makes the difference between the warriors that live,
mm-hmm.
you know, through 30 battles and the ones that die the first time out. So.
Right. So I thought that was pretty interesting. And then, obviously, Ciro handily took care of the five men that were sent against him. And then
his sword get broke.
Well, let me ask you this. Do you think he actually dies?
That was a question in my notes. I was like, are you worried about Ciro? I am personally not worried about him. I think we're going to see more of him.
I haven't seen him yet, but again, it's impossible for you to say. It's like this is kind of a spoiler, but not in that I don't, because the only reason is because George R.R. Martin has this annoying habit of having characters that you think are dead pop up later with different names.
Mm.
And, you know, but he doesn't do that all the time either. So, I thought, especially with the show saying, what do we say to the god of death? Not today.
Yeah,
that's a weird line for someone to exit on forever and ever and ever. But on the other hand, I guess if we don't see him, it's not like he's any less cool or badass.
That's right.
If he gets cut down by a full knight wearing plate armor.
But I think... I mean,
there are a lot of steel swords lying on the ground at this point.
I don't think we've seen the last or the first sword of Braavos.
It'd be a shame if we did.
So, yes, it would. If it is, we need to have a spinoff series called The First Sword of Braavos.
Mm-hmm.
Where it's all about Ciro.
and how he got to be first sword.
That's right. How did he get to where he was?
Because in the book, he's more of an elderly man. In the series, he's more of a pretty robust, early middle-aged man, I would say.
Yeah. So he's like real elderly in that?
Not elderly, but he's balding. And,
okay.
You know, he just struck me as more of a Sean Connery and the Highlander kind of, you know.
Right.
So, we also have the scene of Sansa with the dog.
Yep. The hound,
the dog, whatever. He's called the dog quite a bit.
Is he?
By his own people, no less.
Yeah.
And then we see also the name of the episode, the pointy end, is demonstrated as Arya puts that to work against the stable boy.
Yeah, he's preparing to take her to the queen or whatever, and she's like, get away, and he kind of impales himself, though.
Mm-hmm.
I was reading through Wikipedia, and I guess there's some dissonance between this and the novels, and maybe some people are upset about it. I guess in the novels, it was more like Arya was actively going to kill this dude to get the hell out of Dodge, and in the show, it was more like he accidentally impaled himself.
Well, and I don't know whether that was to try to attempt to preserve a little bit more of her innocence, but yeah, in the book she was more decisive, and this was a bigger moment. You know, the guy this boy is menacing her, but once she got the sword in his belly, he's like, became this kind of pitiful, oh God, please take it out, kind of. Right.
Please take it out.
That's
a gut wound, boy.
Yeah, that ain't fun.
You're going to die.
Yeah.
Loud.
Yeah, especially in the medieval times.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, that kind of puts this whole vignette of the House of Stark, the falling of the House of Stark. I thought it was kind of an interesting contrast of the Lannister men versus the Starks. It's very Imperial Stormtrooper versus Rebel Alliance.
Oh, yeah.
All the Lannisters.
Everybody's getting cut down.
And
yeah.
they also had this, like, you know, really flashy red armor with the gold trim, and everything's all so-so versus the Norsemen. They're wearing these hoary furs,
right.
And they don't have quite as nice shields and swords.
They're not exactly uniform.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
So,
anyway, I think Northmen would tell you to go fuck yourself if you asked them to wear a uniform, honestly.
Probably.
Yeah. So, even if you were to pay for them. So, next we see Ned, and he's enjoying his time in the dungeons.
Yeah, and Varys comes to visit him. And he informs Ned of, you know, kind of like current events.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of like, you know, I have to, why is Varys even down here? Is it because he feels bad for Ned?
I think that he is trying to, because he says he serves the realm. And I, for one, am going to take him at his word. I think he's down here to further, you know, because no one's talking to Ned. So he's kind of softening Ned up and helping him prepare to accept eventualities that he otherwise might not accept. Softening him up for, you know, there might be a deal, or there might be a path, or, you know, there might be some way out of this. And Ned's not going to want to accept it if he was just pulled out of the dungeon with no one talking to them at all.
Mm,
so Varys is kind of preparing the way for some of these machinations that happen later in the episode.
Yeah.
That's my take on it.
Okay.
I also thought it was funny that Ned didn't want to just take his pro-offered drink. Thought it was poison.
Oh, yeah. No one trusts the eunuch.
Right. But by the end of the scene, he's actually asking for death, you know. Why doesn't anyone trust a eunuch? You would think in this society the eunuchs would be more trustful.
Well, that's why they cut their balls off.
Well, right. I mean, in
so ancient, they would be trustworthy with the harems.
Exactly. Why is this eunuch particularly seen as distrustful? Is that because
he's not in charge of a harem?
Is that just a weirdly Westeros form of bigotry?
I don't know. I can't. Yeah, it must be like historically in Westeros. Historically in Westeros, there must be, you know, some kind of history of eunuchs being used
as the Great Eunuch Rebellion,
as pawns in the Game of Thrones.
Actually, that is kind of spoilerific and true. I'll talk about that a little bit.
That's a pure guess on my part.
You just actually jogged a memory loose of me. Mm. So, anyway. Isn't it kind of weird that Ned would hold him in contempt because he didn't save? Like, what was Varys supposed to do?
You watched everybody die. And he's like, yeah, I'd do it again.
Do you know me?
Yeah. Do I look like a hero? Me?
Yeah, right.
Do you see a hero before you?
Plus, he's the one that fucked. Ned's the one that fucked up. I mean,
yeah. He should have got the hell out of Dodge while he could.
Mm-hmm.
That's what he should have done.
Well, no, he should have got.
He should have got the hell out of there.
Imprisoned Cersei and all of her children instead of thinking that, because he knew when Robert got home, he'd put them all to death. So, like you said, it's his mercy that killed the king and landed him into dungeons.
Oh, right? Yeah. I would have just left them to whatever bullshit they're up to and
right,
went back north.
Right.
That's all I got to say.
So, we go back to the wall and we see two of the Night's Watch brothers being wheeled in dead.
Yeah, hey, and they look like those things from the very first episode.
I think they're just like dead bodies at this point.
They have blue. Like, their eyes are blue and their skin's tinted blue.
Well, that doesn't surprise me. They are frozen bodies after all, but I didn't notice
that. Their eyes were weird.
Yeah, I didn't notice that their eyes were really blue at first.
The first thing I thought when I saw this was, yeah, why are you not setting fire to those assholes? And that's exactly what everybody else said, too, except for Lord Mormont, one of them examined or whatever.
Exactly.
Why
would you have the blind guy examine him? I mean, what's he going to do?
Determine cause of death?
By touching?
I don't know.
That would be a pretty gross job if you're a coroner that only has to identify things by touch.
Yeah.
So.
But then I guess there's some, at the very end of the scene, there's some unpleasant tidings from King's Landing.
Yep.
That could only, we can only guess what those are.
Mm-hmm. Did we get to the point where did they go immediately to the Lord Commander's room at this point?
I
thought so.
Yes.
So and he finds out and tells him not to do something stupid.
Mm-hmm.
Then we go back to
because he's already taken the oath. So if he abandons his post,
right? I didn't even think he was thinking that kind of stupid. I think he's thinking more of later on in the episode stupid. They just don't. You're angry. And
oh
irrational.
No! I thought that I he got the feeling that John was like going to pack up and leave and go down to King's Landing.
He did get up with a little bit of purpose there, didn't he? Yeah. So we go down to King's Landing where we see poor Sansa being thoroughly mind fucked, like gang raped by about 5 different dudes and a girl. About her father being an awful traitor.
Oh, yeah. This is what I call the corruption of Sansa.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's a big brainwashing session.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, yeah, it's bullshit. Why do you want to talk to your father? We told you he was a traitor. Oh, like...
It seems to me that as I was watching this, that Grandmeister Pycelle was the one most anti-Sansa. Did you get that impression?
Yes, I got that impression too. I don't know what he's at. I question his motive. What is he just trying to make himself look good to Cersei?
Right.
And Joffrey, or you know, what's his motive there?
Right. So is there anything else to talk about that? Because they basically want her to prove her loyalty by writing to Catelyn and Robb to beg of them to keep the king's peace.
Well, they want him to come down and bend a knee.
Oh, right, yeah, right. Swear fealty to Prince Joffrey.
Yeah, that's more than keeping the peace.
Right.
That's not just like, hey, don't bring your warriors down here. That's like, come down here, bend your knee, and we'll throw you in the dungeon with your father.
We leave King's Landing up north of Winterfell as we see Robb getting word. And
he gets that letter that they'd ask her, right?
This is a badass scene, because obviously their Meister sees right through it. He goes, yes, it's your sister's hands, but the queen's words. Mm-hmm. And his Meister informs him or reminds him that this is a royal command, you know, that you can't just like ignore it. And he's like, oh, I'll go, but I'm not going to go alone.
Right.
And then we see the...
Luwin, I kind of got this as like, okay, Luwin's doing his Meisterly duty by advising against rash action, but it's like when Robb determines, like, we're going down there in force. Lewin's kind of like, yeah.
I thought I saw a little glimmer and a glimmer in his eye when he's like, right. All the banners, my lord.
Yeah.
So, I also thought that Greyjoy had a couple of nice moments of not being a total cock.
Yeah.
He was like, you know, because finally.
Not enough to reverse my opinion, but.
No, but I mean, this is the point where Robb. Yeah, Robb's doing what he's been trying to counsel him this whole time. I mean, Greyjoy kind of comes off, I want to say, smart in this exchange. He's like, you know, if you'd have, you know, and I wonder if Robb's thinking, man, if I had marched a little bit earlier when all this shit started going down, maybe my father wouldn't be in prison right now.
Right.
The first time they made an attempt on his life. Anyways. Yeah. Well, I'm sure Ned would have had a lot better success holding the city with 18,000 Northmen at his back.
Yeah.
So anyway, we go back to the Eyrie, the fucked up, crazy, creepy ass Eyrie. And
sister is one strange bitch, man.
And we see Catelyn is just furious with her sister that she's not going to move one iota worth of knights from the Vale from protecting her son. And that's basically it.
And she withheld information from her. She's like, the letter was for me.
Well, yeah. I mean, she wasn't awoken, but, you know, it's not like she kept it for a day or two.
Yeah.
But still, it was just a shitty thing.
Yeah.
But other than Robert wanting to suck on the booby, like, every 30 seconds.
His name's Robin.
Nah.
Yes.
No.
Yes.
Wait.
It is Robin.
All right, listeners, we took a little break to Google this because I couldn't let this bullshit slide. It is Robert. the only son of John and Lysa.
I stand corrected. I could have swore I keep hearing Robin coming out of that strange woman's mouth.
I just want to get it right because, man, hell hath no fury like a fanboy scorned. Or,
all right.
Or,
well, anyways,
something.
Robert's a spoiled...
Like, I'll mispronounce a name, but I won't get their, you know, substitute it with something else, hopefully.
Well, anyways, Robert's a spoiled booby brat.
He is. He surely is. Let's see. Where are we at now?
We are elsewhere.
We're still in the Vale, though. I don't think we've left the Vale because they're getting menaced by these mountain men. Bronn and Tyrion on the road. And we see that, you know, Bronn's not going to be Tyrion's toady.
Yeah, he's not a yes man.
In fact, if the gold were ever to run out with Tyrion, I'm thinking that Bronn wouldn't be around at all.
He's totally mercenary.
Yeah, so... Yeah.
He's funny and witty and skilled, but...
And I think he likes Tyrion.
Right.
But he likes his gold and his life more.
Yeah, that's right.
And I also think that this is kind of setting a dangerous precedent in that Tyrion's base of power relies entirely upon his father and family.
Hmm.
And he doesn't always act in their best interests or in ways that please them.
Yeah. Do you know something I don't?
No, I'm just saying that I thought... you know, some fans, I think that Bronn kind of, like, takes a shine to Tyrion, but don't ever mistake him as a friend or even loyal.
Right. Maybe a friend, but not necessarily loyal.
But when we see Shaga, son of Dolph of the Stone Crows, appear...
Every time I hear his name, I think of Shoggoth.
One of the great old ones.
Cthulhu mythos, yeah. Shoggoth.
Speaking of fanboy rage, I'm not sure if that's even right. It might not have been one of the great old ones.
No, it probably isn't.
It's one of the
he's a creature.
Outer gods or whatever. Yeah. But definitely into mythology. You know, I gotta say, George R. R. Martin's not really known for his comedy. This is probably the funniest Game of Thrones episode of all time. Agree or disagree?
Yeah, it's pretty funny.
I mean, the next line when he's like, you know, how do you want to die, half man? He's like, yeah. In my own bed at the age of 80 with a belly full of wine and a girl's mouth around my cock.
Yeah, it's pretty good. I think it throws off the Hill Tribe long enough for him to be able to start negotiating.
Right.
Yeah.
And the Hill Tribe doesn't want gold.
Dude, he promises the whole Vale to these guys.
By strength of arms. That I'm gonna, you know, you have to cower when these knights roll back because they've got all this awesome armor and weaponry, but I'm going to make you their equal.
Really, it came off to me like he was actually promising the Vale, not just like, hey, you can have all these weapons and take the Vale yourself.
Really?
Like, yeah.
Especially later on the episode when he's like, these guys require 3,000.
Yeah,
helms,
I mean, later
swords.
On the episode it sounds like that, but my initial reaction was like, wow, he just gave the Vale to these dudes.
I don't think he has that well, I mean, he might be lying, but I don't think he has that kind of power.
Well, no, that would mean that the Lannisters would have to come up there and take it and then give it.
Or it'd be granted as a boon, and I don't see the royal family granting that kind of boon to...
They are the royal family.
That's what I'm saying, but I don't see them...
You don't see them giving it out? Yeah, because they'd just rather crush them than...
Yeah, it'd be like giving, you know, Winterfell up. Yeah, that's like, well, that's a big, big jewel. That's saved for nobility, man. So we go back to the wall. We jump around a lot in this episode. It's very Martin-esque in that way. We see the master of arms at the wall, whose name is escaping me.
Alistair.
Yeah. Adding traitor to the bastard epitaph that he hangs on John. Which,
yeah, he likes goading that John.
Right, and he gets him to assault his superior officer, which I'm sure is pretty universally something that gets you in hot
water.
That
wasn't very assaulty, but yeah.
Well, he pulled a knife on him.
Did he stick it in him?
Well, it's because a bunch of his brothers physically restrained him. Is that the way the military works?
No.
I'm not a fighting man, Madru.
No, that's not the way it works. It works the way it turned out here.
So would you... You wouldn't actually be put to death for something like that in like the Corps, would you? You wouldn't be executed.
What? No.
For trying to stab a superior officer?
Probably no.
Is all jail time?
Executed? No.
Do they execute you for anything in the Corps?
In times of war, desertion.
Really?
Is punishable by death.
Or any kind of other act of treason.
Right.
But peacetime, not so much.
No.
Yeah.
Brig time. Mm. So it actually depends on your unit. You know, you may get out of it without any kind of official
really?
Official punishment.
Really? So He acts up just long enough for the Lord Commander to come in there and tell him, hey, I told you not to do something stupid and get confined to his quarters.
Yeah, that sounds about like what I'd expect.
Yeah. So, but you don't know. I mean, there might have been more punishment forthcoming, but we'll never know because in the middle of the night,
Ghost... That's right. Ghost must sense the zombies and he comes and gets John.
Yeah, he does an elaborate Lassie impersonation.
Right. I don't know. It's like... I wonder where Lord Mormont was, but anyways, the zombies were there, and Lord Mormont wasn't yet in Lord Mormont's, in the Lord Commander's quarters.
He was taking Lord,
so, you know,
Lord's
this,
piss.
This makes me, did the zombies have enough intelligence to come there and seek out the Lord Commander, or was it just happenstance that they happened to be in the leader?
Well, you know, it's interesting, because I kind of I was describing them as zombies while I was watching it last night, and my girlfriend said, no, they're not zombies, they're, like, fighting with intelligence and purpose, like, and I don't know enough about these whites,
White Walkers.
Yeah, well, I think they're called, like, whites, W-I-G-H-T-S.
Oh, you're talking about the zombies.
Yeah.
They're called whites.
In the canon.
Yeah.
But I don't know enough about them to say one way or another whether they actually have the intelligence or whether they're just kind of thralls or what. But, I don't know. What did you think? I didn't think they were using any particular tactics. It was more just, like, grab and strangle.
Yeah, but, I mean, what's...
Do they use weapons?
What's the chance? It seemed... I haven't seen enough of them.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we only saw them at the beginning.
Didn't he pull that sword out of his belly and immediately throw it down, or did he come at him with it? I can't remember.
I cannot remember either. I think he threw it down. He dropped it.
Right.
But still, to be in the Lord Commander's quarters, out of all the places to go, I mean, was that where they were stored?
Well, I just wonder, because Aemon is a pretty high-ranking member of the Night's Watch. I wonder if they're all kind of quartered together. So if they were taking up to his quarters to be investigated... If that's not how they didn't wind their way into the...
Well, without the type of information being supplied, I'd have to say that there's some kind of intelligence there.
Okay.
So.
Anyway, we do find out that they're extremely flammable. And that's not just like... I think that's part of the deal, that they burst into flame at the drop of a match.
Right, well, that was what... Was it Sam at this point in time? He informs everybody that out of something he read that they can only fire is the weapon of choice for these things.
Well, fire is what kills them, but I didn't know that it necessarily implied that, you know, they go up like kindling. But apparently they do.
Yeah.
Like you throw a lamp at them and woof, suddenly that's
well,
it.
If you throw a lamp at them, there's oil. The oil breaks.
I guess that's true.
So
for the first time, we take a trip across the narrow sea. And we see that...
rape and pillage.
We see
village.
That the Khal is busy keeping his promise. And oh, the rapes. Oh, the pillaging that's going on.
They're raping and pillaging on the wrong side of the ocean, though, for that promise.
Well, but, I mean, the whole point of them doing that, as Jorah's saying, is like...
Oh, yeah, so they can collect...
They're doing slave collecting.
And actually, they're actually collecting gold at this point in time, they can buy a ship.
Right. Because,
it's the first time they've ever worried about currency.
Exactly. So she's getting what she wants, but it's not exactly the way she envisioned
it. Not the way she wants it.
So she decides to take all these girls as her daughters and give them royal protection, which
is not gonna does not jive with the men.
No,
of the Lord.
No, it pisses off one in particular who takes the grievance to Drogo. Drogo wants to laugh it off and be like, "Look, you know, find some other. There's plenty of." There's plenty of women around the city to be raped. Go find another one. And Mago didn't want to hear nothing. He's like, you know, Cal listens to some foreign bitch is no Cal at all and draws on him. And then Drogo unleashes the curse of all curses as he disarms himself and kills the dude with his own sword. He's like, you're not going to get burned. You're not going to get buried. The crows are going to eat your guts. The rain's going to fall on your skin.
And then he does like a Patrick Swayze move from Roadhouse and rips the dude's
throat
ripper.
Or a MacGruber.
MacGruber.
Have you not seen the movie
I've
MacGruber?
I've not seen MacGruber.
That's his move. He rips people's throats out. But
Is it a comedy? Is that what it
oh,
is?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
It's a fucked up comedy. But he plays an elaborate game of Cat Got Your Tongue. That's because that's the thing. He actually pulled his tongue out from the back.
Yeah.
You know, Cuban necktie,
yeah.
removal right. service.
And he throws on a pile of trophies or something, doesn't he? It's like,
oh yeah, because he had a whole pile of heads yeah. in there. Now, what do you think? Because he got this scratch, and it really is, as far as war wounds go.
Yeah, I think he was a big pussy for allowing the females to worry about the scratch.
So yeah, I agree. He is kind of a big pussy for letting. Yeah, and I think that,
a lot of
scars
the
are
men,
cool, man. Chicks yeah. dig the
and
scar.
A lot of the men there, I think, also thought he was a big pussy for allowing it to happen.
Might be the beginning of the end for Drogo.
Yep,
he's not going to be a laugh. He be able to laugh too much of this off.
Should have never tried to tap that foreign putang.
So we go back to Winterfell and we see all the bannermen assembled in the
yeah,
hall.
Yeah, without watching that montage, I was too expensive to film.
Although I did think that the smash zooms out from Winterfell as the crows, as the ravens flew,
yeah.
was pretty badass in its own right.
Yeah, it was cool.
But anyway, we see the great John Umber, one of my favorites, because I'm a big fan of the Battles of Westeros board game. And
is he a badass?
The great
that?
John is a fucking badass. Yeah. He's a tank.
Even without those two fingers?
I think he's pre-finger loss, but yeah, if it wasn't, he definitely doesn't miss them much.
Yeah, he has a problem with authority, I think.
A little bit.
A problem with...
He also really wants to
Rob's
lead...
Rob's authority and not having enough authority.
He also really wants to lead that vanguard, which isn't that the most dangerous thing you can do? Isn't
the vanguard is the forward portion of the army.
Yeah.
So it's all about glory for this dude.
But he don't give a fuck about the fact that he's going to be the first one meeting Lannister Steel.
No, it's about the... Maybe he does. He wants to feed the Lannister Steel.
Yeah, right.
You know?
So
I knew guys like this.
Right. So he's like, so he doesn't get his way. He wants to leave, and
yeah, which is paramount to treason.
And Rob points that out.
You're breaking your word
because you're fine to do
your
that.
Oath breaker.
You're fine to do that, Lord Umber. But just so you know, as soon as I take care of the Lannisters, I'm going to march north, root you out of your keep, and hang you. So again. Not known for sense of humor, but this was a very funny scene, the way it was written.
Yeah, because he goes to pull his sword, right? Like, yeah. He's like, and then the dog attacks
him
and
chews two fingers off. Uh-huh.
And then they joke about it. He's like, you're just doing that, you know, because to pull his sword on Rob would be, you know, it'd be like...
It's death to bear steel against your lord.
Right.
That was the
It would have been a point of no return.
Right.
And so he's like, obviously you're just taking out your, you know, to cut the lord's meat, right, or whatever. So
the meats are bloody tough. I wrote in my notes as everyone laughs, these Northmen are fucked up.
But it allows him to save face.
And that's a real test of leadership that Rob
right.
made. Because he could have been, you know, well, kill him and lost a powerful ally. And also kind of looked, you know...
Oh, demoralized. That would demoralize everybody.
And look weak while looking strong.
Mm-hmm.
This way, I
cruel.
Think... Cruel. Yeah, I think this is the way... I mean, this was a win-win for him. He kept an ally. He showed Great John his place and, you know, makes himself look good in front of the men. We also see Bran. He's praying at the old tree.
The old gods, the godswood.
And we see a little bit more that...
We see a little bit more, all right.
We see a little... So we see evidence of Hodor having giant's blood in him.
Yeah, with these big swinging cock.
Again, how did you black that out the first time?
I don't know. I guess I'm emotionally
I see something
scarred.
Like that, and it goes right to my internal spank.
Maybe
bank.
I'm you spank it to Hodor's cock.
I'm sorry.
My internal spank.
What
bank?
Am I going to say? I mean, I can't deny it's a nice cock. What am I going to say?
That you don't spank it to his cock. That's what you're going to say.
Very rarely have I seen Mad Brew turn red. I'm proud to say this is such an occasion. I forget, what's the slave girl's name?
Osha.
She once again says, you guys are doing the wrong thing. All these guys should be going up north of the wall.
Right.
And boy, 18,000 men would probably shore that fucker right up. I mean, they got less than 1,000 right now.
Would it shore it up enough?
Well,
you can't. Well, it's like, I mean, you can't. To be honest, I don't think with this point in time, the North can even. You can't worry about the wall until you get everything internally. As the Seven Kingdoms can't worry about the wall until everything is settled internally.
I don't know about that, because the North is maybe the one place that that doesn't apply, because like Great John said, you don't need a whole lot of guys to hold the neck. You can, and historically that's been the case, that you can throw back much larger armies coming south because they have to just choke point that they have to get through to get to the North, which is half of the fucking kingdom. So they could hold that and still send a lot of guys up north. But, you know, it's like...
But no one believes the story.
The classic
anyway,
Donald Rumsfeld quote where there's the unknown unknowns, the known unknowns, and he, like, elaborated
all
these...
And the shotgun blast to your face.
Right, yeah. So it's like they don't know the danger up north, and they do know the danger up south, and they got to go address that.
But it does... I think the scene is important in further establishing Bran's connection to the mystical. Because, you know, she's sort of like, you know, they're answering you.
Oh, it also establishes how much I think Rob is like his father, because in the previous scene, which I neglected to mention, Rob went to Bran and basically laid a heavy weight on the boy that you're going to be the Lord of Winterfell while I'm gone.
Right.
So the first thing he does is take off to the Godswood to kind of get some spiritual guidance. Mm-hmm. And that's a very Neddian thing to do. So up at the wall, we're talking a little bit. We get some more background about the White Walkers.
Yeah, but now the Night's Watch are for sure the White Walkers are now a legitimate threat.
Right. Well, when you see the dead walk like that.
Yep.
We see that...
This is where Sam and... I'm sorry, we got to hit ourselves. This is where Sam informs him about the fire.
Right. He got it from a very old book he read in the library. And we learn more... this is the most we've ever learned about the White Walkers. They sleep beneath ice for thousands of years, and when they awake... He doesn't really trail off. He says, we're just going to... I hope the wall's big enough.
Yeah.
So...
I wonder what their numbers are like. Did that book have numbers? How many White Walkers are we getting?
I also wonder... I don't know. I haven't read for... I wish I'd read... I'm going to have to read all the freaking books. I have a hard time reading them when I haven't seen the series. Because all the characters and the situations...
Yeah, you need faces with names.
I do. I really do. Anyway, we go back up north. We see Rob taking counsel with his military leaders, and his mother shows up. She's made her way back from the Vale, basically she lies out the stakes. You know, our only hope is for you to win in the field, because if you lose, everyone dies.
Right.
We're all going to die. This whole family will come to an end.
Mm-hmm.
A little bit of no pressure, you know,
because the same guy that try it well was unsuccessful, obviously ending the Targaryen line, is the same guy that would be, if he's still around,
right,
which is Tywin. Mm-hmm. Of the Lannisters.
So this is another theme of this episode, is everybody's coming and going, because we see Tyrion arrive at Camp Lannister, and this becomes a
I was gonna say, I think there's another important piece in the last scene.
Yeah,
because Kat and Rob, you know, they confer, and it's like they know that Arya's missing. Mm-hmm. So, like, Sansa's captured and being corrupted. Ned's in the dungeons. Everybody down there is dead. But Arya has, you know, there's no word about Arya.
And they let Tyrion go.
Right.
So they have nothing. They have no leverage at all. But anyway, we're at Camp Lannister, and we see the meme that gets repeated often throughout the books about cutting off manhood and feeding it to goats. I also think that, because he's like, you guys should really stay here and let me kind of smooth this over.
Right.
And
they're not going to have any of that.
Yeah, the son of Dolph is not born yesterday. And I love the look on Tyrion's face as he kind of like... sets his jaws like, all right, it's time to meet my father.
Yeah.
Like, he's like just mentally
this
thinking,
this is going to be painful.
And again, like, this...
They have more than one tribe now. Did you... Like, you have the Stone Crows, the Burned Men, and the Black Ears.
Yeah, that's a...
Did they pick those up along the way?
I kind
were
of thought they were
part
all...
of the Stone Crows?
Yeah,
the
those are... That's kind of like their lineage, you know, but they all roll as one kind of raiding party. And they also fight amongst themselves as well. And there's something to each one of those. I forget what, like the Black Ears is because they wear trophies of ears around their neck. Yeah.
Yeah.
And the Burn Men, I believe that's part of their rite of passage, that they actually pass a part of their body through fire.
Mm.
Anyway.
The Black Ears pull a Daryl.
Yeah. Well, they think they only take it. They only take them from living that when they defeat it. If they kill somebody, they don't take their ears. It's only if they defeat.
Only if they scream when they take it.
Yeah, because they say there's no honor in taking a trophy from a dead person because they're never going to come back and want it back. If you take an ear from a living person, that's ballsy because they might come back and want it back.
So yeah, they get in Tywin's tent,
and again, this not of known as a funny series, but this I thought was another funny.
Did you catch where Tywin keeps the ale out of Tyrion's reach?
He plays keep away with
that
it.
It was very on the sly there, but yeah.
Plus, when he trails off, when he realizes he doesn't know Bronn's lineage, and Bronn's like,
that was the best. Yeah,
yeah,
you wouldn't know him. You wouldn't know him.
That's three solid, pretty good chuckles in a series. Fairly devoid of them.
Yeah. But it's funny that, because, you know, you think most people would cough up their father's name or whatever just because you're in the presence of a lord, but, you know,
Bronn don't give a shit.
Fuck you.
Right. Hey,
I don't know my daddy's name. You don't know my daddy's name. It's like,
his last name's probably Snow or Sand or Stone or whatever the bastard names are.
Right.
I also thought... You know, I mean, hell, not giving a fuck has gotten him this far in life. Why would he start now? This is another kind of a catch-up. So we see, it's kind of a little annoying in this episode how many different times people got caught up in current events that we already know.
Yeah.
But at the end, Tywin wants the mountain men to the hill people to ride with him in this battle against Rob, because they find out that Rob is marching against them.
Well, of course. You owe them something. You put them out in front. Let them get decimated. You owe less.
Yep. But...
because, I mean, seriously, at best, they're irregular troops.
I just think it's kind of funny that Shaga would go along with it, but he's like, yeah, sure, whatever, but only if the Half-Man fights with us.
Yeah.
Which, you know, not Tyrion's
really... That's not
going to
turn out well.
Really looking for the ale. So, we go back to King's Landing.
No, Stark's camp.
Oh, you're right, yeah. There was a brief...
Because they're talking
going
strategies,
back to battle camp.
And then they catch the Lannister spy.
But they're also setting up stuff with the Freys. We find that they control, like, the only convenient crossing so they can get to either the Riverlands or...
Right, and he's actually a Stark bannerman, but he's like...
He's a
dick.
Yeah.
His allegiance.
Right. He's behind a strong keep, and he knows he's pretty much invulnerable, and he controls that choke point and knows it, and he is not the most loyal of the bannermen.
Mm-hmm.
Which is kind of a theme, that there's lots of shifty alliances, and sometimes this, you know, having someone as a sworn bannerman is not all it's cracked up to be. But they do...
Rob lets the Lannister scout go after he confirms, you know, what kind of numbers he counted, which was actually greater than their numbers.
Yep.
Not by much,
but I also think the key point is there's diversion. He's basically saying, I'm coming to Tywin, when really he's going to try to go confront Jaime's group.
Mm-hmm.
So he let him go for a reason, number one. So Tywin would probably think he's an idiot. And a green and, you know, too merciful and a boy and all that kind of stuff, but also to catch him with his pants down.
Yeah. And the Big John, is that his name?
Yeah, Great John.
Great John. Yeah, he's not too thrilled about that.
No.
He's not very savvy with those aspects. I don't think he's very savvy. You know, he may be able to charge into battle, but as far as strategy...
Yeah, he's
good with tactics.
He's great with a claymore.
Strategy, not so much.
Exactly. So he's going to catch up pretty soon. We go back to King's Landing. I believe we see another scene of Varys.
Or maybe it's just subterfuge he's not good with. I don't know.
Subtlety at all?
Oh, yeah.
The Great John? You need the Lesser John Umber for that. Which there is. I think that's why he has... there's a Small John. Because there's two John Umbers.
A Small John? Is there a Long John?
It's like Little John and Big John. You know, the Merry Men. Anyway, King's Landing, go back. Stark's being... they just kind of show him rotting away in the cell. I don't think there's any additional information.
Yeah, my note said, just in case you didn't believe it, Ned is still in the dungeon.
Exactly. And which was a very weird scene. But we go right to Sansa... kind of overseeing the court, and we see a slint of the gold cloaks.
Oh, he's getting
the
lordship.
The City Watch
or
is getting
right?
A big lordship. You know, all the lands and rights of Harrenhal, which are described in the book as to be one of the richer lands of Westeros.
Wow.
But Harrenhal is also currently, I believe, under control of the Starks. So it's kind of a sort of an empty...
So, yeah, if you can go up there and claim it.
Yeah. And also, Harrenhal is believed to widely believed to be cursed, the actual castle itself.
Oh, because people that
stay there do not have a good...
It's not much of a lordship.
But we find that Tywin Lannister is going to be made a hand. Barristan Selmy, the Lord Commander of the Kingsguard, is
he's dismissed.
Thrown out on his ass, which outrages him. And I thought, again, this is a very badass scene where he draws a sword and the rest of the jackasses step forward.
Oh,
and
he's like, I could cut through
you all. Yeah, even as an old man, I could cut through you like a cake. And in the book, I thought the line was actually cooler in the book. He's like, I could cut through you like so much butter. So then he throws a sword down and tells the boy sitting on the throne to melt it down and add.
Yeah, well, there's lots of laughs about him until he drew his sword.
Right.
So everybody's like chuckle, and then he's like shwing, and everybody's like fuck,
because he's like, I'm still a knight. Peter Baelish Littlefinger says apparently going to be a naked knight.
Right. Baelish sucks.
So you think that'll actually? You think he'll be that this move will haunt the Lannisters?
I don't know. I don't know how big of a player Barristan's going to be in this. Obviously, he's not going to be happy with the Lannisters. So if he does come back into play, it will probably be against them. But he is old though, he's also very dutiful. Him and Ned probably get along pretty well.
And he's still one of the top swordsmen in the kingdom, even at his... I mean, he's not... I don't think that's the empty boast that he made. I think that probably outside of the Mountain, Jaime Lannister, and a couple others, he's probably the best pure swordsman in the nation.
Mm.
In the kingdom, rather. So, what else we got to talk about? Oh, so Sansa then gets down
pleads
on her knees.
Pleads for her father's life.
And Joffrey's heart is moved by her sweet words.
Yeah, and in my notes here, I made another nick at the Meister. Why is he so hardcore about the treason bit?
I think he's, supposed to be the bad cop or bad advisor.
So she's really scared. The king and Jim... On WWE wrestling commentators, he's the heel. He's the heel. Who's the face? Varys.
Varys seems to be the one, the soft peddling mercy here. What do you think of the biblical quote? I don't know that that's in the book. The wisdom oft comes from the mouth of babes.
Is that a biblical quote?
That's a messianic parable.
You got me, dude.
Anyway. So in scene is Joffrey saying you have to get your father to confess.
Yeah, he's gotta confess
to treason and say that I'm king or there's no mercy, which we know that's going to be a bitter fucking pill for one Eddard Stark.
Yep.
And the sad version of the Game of Thrones
at this point in time, I don't think it's going to be very difficult to convince him to do that.
Mm-hmm. So, next time, we're going to talk about Episode 9, Baelor, referring to the Great Sept of, I believe. And anything else you want to say about this episode?
Nope.
If you'd like to keep up with everything else that Mad Brew and my other co-host Jim are doing, you can do that at baldmove.com. Find all of our podcasts and articles. If you'd like to send us email on the Game of Thrones, please do so at the Night's Watch, or just rather, Night's Watch at baldmove.com. You can also reach us on our Facebook site, facebook.com/baldmove, and tweet at us, Twitter @baldmove. The other ways you can support us are please tell a friend. If you know someone's into Game of Thrones, mention our cast, The Bald Move.
Or somebody's in The Walking Dead.
In The Walking Dead.
Justified.
Yeah, Breaking Good. Breaking Bad, rather. All those things. Also, it helps, especially with us, with the cast brand new, to leave us good reviews on iTunes and subscribe, because that pumps up our... results on the iTunes searches. And also, you can directly contribute a few stags to our coffers by using our amazon.baldmove.com affiliate link. And the way that works is if you put that in your browser, amazon.baldmove.com, it takes you right to Bald Move sites with our affiliate link. And anything you purchase, it doesn't cost you anything extra. You get the same shipping Everything stays the same except for we get a couple pennies thrown our way by Amazon. So we appreciate that. It helps us pay for the bandwidth that we use for the cast. That's all I've got. We'll see you next time. We are going to play our theme song out and introduce some spoilers after music, so if you want to stick around for that. Otherwise, I'll see you next time. I'm Aaron.
And I'm Mad Brew.
See ya. Okay, we're back with spoilers. A lot of stuff's pointing towards next week's episode. You know, we've got the setup with Sansa going to try to get her father to betray her honor, basically. I caught myself saying a giant spoiler. About the fact that this witch that Daenerys gotten
poisons
to take care of Drogo. They heavily imply that she's poisoning him. Because she's going to care for that wound, the next thing you know, this little scratch.
Oh, yeah. I mean,
you don't naturally got infected.
For sure, right? But after the fact, yeah. Well, yeah, she's the one that killed Drogo. She's the one that fucks up the pregnancy, too.
She fucks up. I mean, she knowingly did that black magic thing wrong, in my opinion.
Yes.
So, okay. Yes. Well, I thought we're on the same page on that. A couple other things I want to talk about.
She keeps the stallion from mounting the world.
why does no one ever trust a eunuch? You mentioned that maybe the eunuchs are seen as some pawn. It reminds me, because I'm just getting to this part in reading the books, but Daenerys eventually tries to raise this army, and she goes to one of the free cities where they have this army called the Unsullied. And what they do is they take these, it's very Spartan, in that they take these young boys that have obvious advantages in size and intellect and martial prowess, and they train them.
Martial prowess?
Martial prowess, yes, thank you. They're not good.
The marital?
They're not good for that stuff, because very early on in the training, they cut their balls and penis
wouldn't
off.
Wouldn't that prevent their development? Young boys, if they don't have the testosterone, wouldn't that fucking...
Well, I'm not sure but they do it in the optimum time so that they don't bloat up and they don't have... I mean, the way they explain is there's a little bit of maybe a strength decrease because of testosterone loss, but they've got it down to a science to where... And these guys are hardcore. Like, they don't have names.
So is it like soldier? Do they get shit tattooed on their face?
No, what they do is at the end of each day, they've got these like medallions they wear and their gold buckles that have like a color and an animal. And the animal's something demeaning like snake or maggot. So you might be red maggot one day, and at the end of the day, you take that and you throw it into a big pot with all the other of your unit. And when you wake up in the morning, you get another name. So your name changes every freaking day.
Wow.
And they're like, well, how do they keep track? And he's like, you Unsullied, come here. And he's like, what's your name today? And he's like, Red Maggot. What was your name yesterday? He's like, Blue Snake. What was your name the day before? And he's kept back. And they're like, well, what if they can't keep track? And they're like, well, we call any Unsullied who couldn't do such a thing, who has a hard time. So it's like
remember their name back to the beginning of...
Not to the beginning, but within reason.
Okay.
But, so it's like, that's why they you know, they won't get their orders confused and whatnot. But they don't have any sense of identity. They don't have any sense of money. They can't be bribed. They're kind of like stormtroopers of the Empire in that way. You know, there's nothing that motivates them other than absolute obedience. And in fact, at one point, the guy that's like the used car... The slave salesman that's trying to sell Daenerys on this goes up to one and like just cuts a nipple off, you know, just to show that the guy that they don't even feel pain. They drink this particular drink that's almost like a poison, but it deadens their sense so they don't feel pain.
Wow.
Yeah. So maybe, you know, when you just said that, it's like maybe there is this distrust because of they've been overrun by cyborg eunuch armies. In times past.
They actually ever watched the movie Soldier with Kurt Russell?
Yeah.
Yeah. Their training. Their flashback training.
Yeah. Shade's a Universal Soldier too. Only instead of cutting off their dick, they're dead. Yeah. So that was interesting. Also, you mentioned about Picel, like he seems to be most on the Queen side. Mm-hmm. It turns out that of all the King's advisors, he's the one that's most up her ass. And Tyrion in Book Two, because he's trying. Tyrion's made Hand of the King in Book Two, and as we know from watching the series, one of his first things he does is he tries to cut off his sister's sources of power. And the one thing he can't determine is, like, you know, who between Varys, Littlefinger, and Pycelle, who's the one that's on his sister's side. So he develops this elaborate canary game,
really,
where he tells them all the same thing, but he changes the details to see which one his sister confronts him with. And he finds out that it's Pycelle, and so then he's got him. So I think that's it almost seems heavy-handed. But when I was first watching the series, before I read the books, it didn't come across that way. So I think it only seems heavy-handed that he's, like, totally on the Queen's side, because I know that. So, and then last, with Selmy, I talked about that George Martin has this habit of bringing people back under different names. He actually comes back and plays the role of one of Daenerys's advisors.
Who does?
Barristan Selmy, the former Lord Commander of the Night's Watch, and becomes one of her most trusted advisors under a different name. Like, he grows out his beard and, like, plays up the fact that he's an old man, and he kind of becomes, like, you know, wears robes and...
So he's doing a Pycelle.
Yeah, kind of. Only he's a little bit more badass. I mean, he saves her from an assassination attempt. That's one of the ways he works his way into her camp. So,
I wouldn't have called him going over to the Targaryens.
Well, other than the Mad King, I don't think the Targaryens were necessarily reviled amongst the people. I mean, in fact, Prince Rhaegar was held in pretty high regard.
Okay.
So, it's just the fact that the one guy went crazy and started killing everybody and being unreasonable, so... But, anyway, so I think that... when he hears tale of her raising this army and doing all these great things, that he goes over there to try to find her, because he just, I think, is motivated a lot by revenge.
Mm.
That, you know, I think he probably put a lot of stock in what Ned Stark said as far as, you know, the Lannisters usurping the throne through this incestuous bullshit thing, and he wants them to go down. So... Anyway, he does...
Who doesn't?
Yeah,
except
no kidding.
For the Lannisters.
Except for the Lannisters themselves. Anything else that you got to contribute?
I don't have any spoilers.
All right. Well, thanks for listening into the spoiler section, and we'll see you guys next time.
Later.